You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Well, good afternoon, friends. Today is Monday, September the 22nd, 2008, and we're talking this afternoon with our friend Doug Gekel. Doug, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Sure good to have you with us. Now, for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, Doug is a trader, a mentor, Christian brother. We made friends with him, three months ago, and developed a relationship. He's been on the show. He's done a number of radio programs with me. He's written 5 articles so far for our blog. And a lot of you have responded to me very positively about both the interviews and the articles that Doug has written. And I know that some of you have emailed Doug, been in touch with Doug, and Doug encouraged you to do that. Now, today we're going to talk a little about the most recent article that Doug has written. But one thing I did want to mention, a lot of you emailed me asking me, have you taken Doug's course? Well, quite frankly, it is a 3-month course. And I had to reply to each and every one of you that, no, I hadn't. So after some prayer on my side and Doug's side and whatever, I'm happy to tell you that I am now participating in Doug's class, in that mentoring program. Although the class started last Monday, I didn't get into the first session until this past Friday, but I enjoyed it. I can tell in my spirit that it's the beginning of a very enlightening journey, and as days and weeks and even months pass, we'll be able to share that with you. But for right now, I want to look at this article that was submitted last week. It's entitled, Do You Have What It Takes? Now, that's sort of a takeoff on the previous article, which said, the title of the previous article, which was 4th in the series, What Does It Take to Be a Successful Trader? And we've talked about that article, and Doug went into some detail. Those of you who have not read that article, you can go to the blog, cfrn.net/blog. You can read all the articles Doug has written. You can also listen to the interview. But this new article, now remember the last one said, this is what it takes, but now the question, do you have what it takes? What prompted you to write this article, Doug?
Well, I look at that as the big question. Trading, most people that trade that are what we call like a retail trader, people that trade from their house or wherever they might trade from individually, they are on their own. They are out for the most part, they trade solely. There's nobody else to be accountable to, which I've talked about before. They're by themselves pretty much in their area, wherever they've designed for their trading to be. And we can write article after article about what it takes, but the question is, do you have what it takes? So that's that you have to pose that question back on yourself, because we have to really evaluate and self-evaluate everything we do as a trader, because there's no one else, unless we surround ourselves with a group of people, that is going to evaluate that for us. So on an individual basis, we need to realize, do we have what it takes? Do I have the discipline? Am I going to be accountable, or am I going to say, oh, it's because the market's doing something different or this or that, or am I just going to be accountable and say, okay, what can I learn from this? And I've said before, want a better life, ask a better question. Want a better trading account, ask better questions to go in to, what could I have done here to avoid this lesson potentially, or what could I have done here to improve my results? What could I have done here to, learn so the rest of the times when I take this style of trade that it's profitable versus non-profitable? Those are just some examples of some questions that when you're asking yourself, do I have what it takes? Those are the questions that you're going to start to pose to yourself, that you should pose to yourself. Avoidance is not, is no way to approach trading. And for you to have what it takes, it means, are you willing to ask yourself the tough questions? Are you willing to you know, explore the mental, the emotional sides, you know, of what's happening while you're in a trade, before you're in a trade, after you're in a trade, what you think about yourself over the weekend. All these things are add up to whether you have what it takes, and they're all self-evaluation questions.
A fearless and searching moral inventory. Do you think most, well, based on your experience, are most people willing to do that?
I would say no. When you look at, are most people maybe are willing to do it but haven't thought to do it, might be the better answer. When they go on the, they embark on the trading journey, a lot of people don't even know that they need to do that. They don't think about how important that the mental aspects of trading are. And again, they have money, so they open an account, and now somebody labeled them a trader, and they haven't done any other mental preparation. Because in the something my pastor said to this weekend kind of resonated for me for trading. He was talking about something completely different, but I caught it for trading. He said perspiration instead of inspiration. Well, most people in trading that come up from a different field are used to making money from perspiration. Well, when we come to trading, you have to really make your money from inspiration. You have to, and I looked at that as your mind. Your inspiration from your mind, your thought processes, your ability to go back and to explore your mental and emotional states. And that's more inspirational from within versus perspiration, you know, is working harder. Because the harder we work actually at trading, it's probably actually the opposite. The harder we push things in trading, we're probably going to get the opposite results of anything else we've ever done in our life. Because as we push harder and work harder, typically we expect more results. But in trading, I don't find that to be true.
Interesting. Part of that perspiration that most traders would put into the trading would be analyzing, you know, thousands of hours of charts after the fact, and a quiet chart, a chart when the day is over. Looking at that chart, I'm not saying you can't glean good information or some information out of it, but it can be very deceptive. Because at the end of the day, you can look back at that historical chart and you can say, okay, I see this, I see that, I see that. But when that chart's flowing, it's an entirely different thing. And I guess my point here is spending thousands of hours staring at historical charts is not necessarily the key to success.
No, it's not. It is important to definitely have screen time, but the bigger ability when you're actually trading is having that screen time, but then knowing like when your time comes, when, you know, the vision's for an appointed time. So is this the right time for me? Is this my trade? Am I emotionally, am I mentally prepared? I've talked about visualization before, and I firmly believe in visualization. As a man thinketh, so I think of that as visualization. So is he, and that's God's law again, and visualization is how I think about myself. How, like, over the weekend, am I sure I can trade again on Monday? Am I certain in my abilities? Do I know no matter what the market does on Monday that I'll be able to trade and be profitable at the end of the day? Or am I unsure? Because if I'm unsure, no matter how sure my charts are, if I'm unsure, I'm going to go in, I'm not going to pull the trigger at the right time, or I'm not going to hold the trade for what I've back-tested, or I'm not, all these things, because I can back-test, like you were just talking about, on flat charts, on non-live markets, and I can, oh yeah, that looks good, and I would close there, and I would end here, and I would close here. But if when I go to that chart, if I'm not holding, if I've done test results in every trade that I've done test results, 76%, I get a 2.5 point return on my trade. Yet when it comes to real time charting and I get a 3-tick retrace, if I pull out every time, well, those back, all my back testing is invalid now because I'm not holding to the target that I've seen on a flat chart. And that was all non-emotional based, just simply checking things off. Well, if I don't keep my emotions checked, do I have what it takes? Because I have to keep my emotions checked at the point and then follow through with the plan that I've set. Remember, plan your trade your plan. Well, if emotionally I don't trade my plan, all my back testing that I've done is invalid because I'm not trading my plan. And that's just from surely from emotional based. From what I've found in the past, most people it's 100% emotional based.
Yeah, when we look at those historical charts, we're calm, cool, and collected. Because there's no fear of pain. There's nothing at risk. We take an objective look. That in itself is deceptive, but when a chart is flowing and when the candle hasn't finished yet, it's a whole different scenario. So, and I'm not against, I don't want anyone to think I'm against you looking at a historical chart. That's not true. Certainly something can be gained from that, but what you said, screen time, that is sitting in front of a market that is alive and vibrant and flowing.
Correct. I always start with flat, what do you call flat chart or a historical chart to get my basis for my trades, and I'll back test that way. But then I've always, part of what I do is then I simulate them for a specific amount of time, and then before I'll even put a small amount of cash to that specific trade, I have to have proper simulation results. And then after the proper simulation results, now I'm willing to take, now I trade more than one contract, but when I introduce a new trade, mentally I only trade with one contract on it, but initially. Why? Because it's still something that's not proven to me. Even though I proved it, back tested it, I proved it simulation, now I have to prove it real-time money. And each step is just as important and not to be left out. And so it's just emotionally, so I can get used to, okay, this is what it does here, and emotionally what the market's doing at the same time during that trade, because individual entries and individual different areas are going to have different results based on, remember, we're not the only one trading emotions. Everyone, the market is all emotional. That's how I look at it. You know, our downs go down faster. Why? When house is on fire, people jump out windows. It rebuilds slower. Why? Because when the insurance company cuts us a check for the burned down house, we're getting the best bids, we're looking at what if we want to change anything, we're thinking about things. Well, a lot of men that I know do that. They'll like analyze everything before they buy it, but are more apt to get rid of something that they don't, you know, like really quick. And so when we have, I don't know women because I'm not a woman, but women might do the same thing. I just know I analyze things a lot when I'm going to buy them. When I sell them, I'm much quicker to sell. So, and I believe that emotion comes through in the market, and we can see that in each individual trade that we take. Is from my experience, there's a lot different feelings to going up than going down as far as different trades and how they come alive. And it's all emotional based is the way I see it.
So, in your article, you talk about, I believe it is essential to explore mentally and emotionally what is happening before, during, and after your trades. Now, some folks would, of course, say, well, gee, doesn't that kind of cloud your mind and get in the way of trying to figure out when you should get in and when you should get out?
And I would say no, it doesn't, because during these times when I'm trading, because my trades are set to memory, so the trade is simply very simple to trigger in and out. It's simply like a light turns on, like we all are used to traffic lights, red, green, red, yellow, green. We're all used to those, and we can instantly react to, okay, put the brakes on, do this, do that. And if I said, how are you feeling when you, because we have it to memory, mm-hmm. How are you feeling when you came to a stoplight? And maybe you had something emotional in your life. Of course you'd be able to to stop at the stoplight and tell me about your motions at the same time. When it comes to trading, that's why I a lot of times call it the pink elephant in the room, because I want my trade and the trades that I use to stand out like a pink elephant. So I can see them, so I know my entries and exits on, in each individual trade clear as a bell when they come up. And so for me to manage my emotions is easy, because that's just a simple red, green, you know, red, yellow, green light. And now, so I can say, okay, well, how are my emotions at this time? What is happening before? Am I anxious? Am I relaxed? Am I fearful? Am I confident? Where am I? Okay, then during the trade, where am I? Again, you can run yourself through the same set of emotions, emotional questions. And then after the trade, where are you? You can do all this while you're trading it takes a little bit, but while you're trading these things, you can do that. And I typically do it as I'm doing the simulation also, so I start to simulate the feelings that would be coming through during when I traded in money. And I'm like, okay, would I hold through this retrace? How do I feel about this retrace? And as I ask all these questions, you know, what can I do for this trade to make the results better? What can I do to make myself more certain in this trade? A lot of times, if I'm not certain in a trade, it's potentially because I don't have the whole thing to memory. I don't remember my results. I don't know what my retraces are. That's why I keep a journal next to me, and I have my what I call my high probability trades, and I have a picture of them. So I have a quick reference that if I have any question, I can look. I can flip through my book here, and I can go, okay, all right, that's it, and that's it. Gives me more certainty. So that's a way that I can control or assist my certainty before, during, and after a trade.
Well, I would venture to say that most any trader, except for the more experienced and the consistently profitable trader, most traders, when they go to put a trade on, they are anxious, they're filled with anxiety, all sorts of emotions are flooding their mind, which probably, to a degree, clouds their vision to truly see the trade that they should be taking.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. A lot of traders, they are emotionally driven on their trades, and they get anxious. They might get in too early. They might get in too late. And those are the key times to really curb our emotions, because we are looking for a specific, and if you don't have a specific set of rules for your trades and follow them, you need to get them. Because what happens is there's too much, like I referred to before, cowboy trading, where it's just emotionally based. Hey, let's go, grab it and run. Where we're not stealing anything here. We don't have to grab it and run. We just, we're not. We just need to emotionally be stable and say, okay, here's all, everything went off. My triggers have all, okay, one, two, three, yep, all right. My X amount of reasons I have to get in a trade, yep, check, 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 check. Okay, enter the trade. Okay, my expectation is this trade is A, B, or C. Okay, if A happens, then I do B. If B happens, then I do C. Whatever your parameters for managing your trade are, and then your simple exits. Now, I don't need too many reasons to exit. I'll exit early before, you know, I need 5 to 7 reasons to get into a trade. I need 1 to 2 to exit, especially when I'm in the profit, because I want to conserve my profit, because I'm all about being consistent and making money.
Right.
It's about money. It's not about if I'm right, wrong, or other. And I'm rigid going in and flexible coming out. So I do not follow too many guidelines to exiting. I really want to exit with a profit. And with the volatile times we've had lately, you know, I've been telling everybody, cut your profits in half. Because things have turned so quickly, unforeseen in some areas recently, that, you know, why not just take half of your profit to be assured that your profit's going to be there, especially when the bars, like on the NQ, were running 5-6 points a bar. That's uncharacteristically too big. That was last week. And so there was a few days that I was just coming out with half my profit. Why? Because it was increasing my probabilities for the trade to work, because I'm then decreasing my target by half. So, and that's a part of getting in, knowing when the market is being a little over emotional, and then I was being under emotional, and I was like, okay, I'll reduce here in order to conserve my profit and be consistent.
Managing the risk.
Yeah.
You talked about the scenario of when you're driving, you know, there's a red light. You really don't have to give it a whole lot of thought. If you've been driving for any length of time, you just almost, as a reflex, you stop because it's a red light. And I know that we've all probably experienced where we're driving and we get locked up in thought about something, and the next thing we know, we've driven 10, 15, 20 miles, and we stopped at every red light, and we went at every green light, but yet we were not even truly conscious of it. We were focused. Our mind was off on whatever else it was occupied on. So that driving became almost like a reflex action. So do you think that applies to trading?
Yes, I don't.
When you have rules-based trading and you and you're not, I think what so many traders struggle with is they look at a chart and they go, okay, well, I got like three good reasons to go long right here, but I also got like three good reasons why I could go short right here. And that brings in the anxiousness and the anxiety and the questions of the, you know, what should I be doing here? And what you're saying is that it's critical to already have that decision made before you sit down.
Yeah, yeah. If we have that decision made before, then we, again, your mind, it's like you said, there's three reasons to go long, there's three reasons to go short. Well, if I tell my mind, find me a trade, my mind's just going to go into an endless loop, and it's going to keep answering the question, there's a trade, there's a trade, there's a trade. How many reasons? There's some reasons why, there's some reasons why, there's some reasons why. And it's going to keep giving me answers because that's what it does. Now, if I've already determined that my target for today, like I referenced earlier, was a pink elephant, and that's just a metaphor for whatever your trade might be called, and if I say, okay, it's my pink elephant that I'm looking for, all that other indecision's gone. Because I can instantly say, well, that's a giraffe. That's not an elephant. That's a coyote. That's a lion. You know, lions and tigers and bears. I know it's not a pink elephant. But when that pink elephant comes stumbling along, I can see him coming from a mile away. So I'm prepared for him, and I've been waiting for him. And you might have several different trades, you know, I have many, many trades that are high probability trades that I sit there and I know one will come after another. So I know one will typically come after another, or this, if it fails, might turn into that. And so there's several high probability trades by linking those trades together. But at the same time, in the middle of the day, or sometimes in the day, there's I don't recognize anything. So instead of trying to turn something into a pink elephant, I just wait for it to come. So I just sit back and I'll be like, all right, that's not what I was looking for. Where is it? All right, well, it's going to be coming later. Let me go have, you know, a coffee or take a break for an hour. You know, why not? You have the ability to do it, you know, and take a break, go do whatever you want to do, or take the rest of the day off. You know, it's not, we don't need to trade every second of every day. And if our trade doesn't come up, well, then we, you know, we might not see it that day. And okay, then we'll just trade the next day.
Now, you mentioned the other day that you personally, you have about 20 what you call, consider to be high probability setups.
Correct.
Does everyone need to have 20 high probability setups?
Oh, no, you can have one. You can have one.
You can become a specialist of one.
Yes, yes.
But you might not get that one every day.
Correct. If most of us would just become a specialist, a master of, I didn't start with 20, I started with one.
Right.
Then I traded that. And then I said, okay, this is coming up about one time a day. I would like to have more frequency. So then I started looking for other ones as the market was running. And what I do now is I actually, as the market runs, in the times when I don't see any of my trades, I actually evaluate the market during that time to see what setups potentially could be coming or what might be developing, or can I see a pattern, or can I recognize something in this area that happens over and over again where I can now create another high probability trade. I do that as the market runs. But if you have a long trade, a short trade, and some sort of channel trade, you've got the three things that the market does, you've got them covered. So 90% of the time you're going to sit on your hands, but the 10% of the time, or 5% or 4%, whatever it is, that your trade comes up, if we trade it with certainty and you have, let's say you have two or three, I recommend all my students leave my class with three high probability setups. So as they're in the market, they have one for each area of the market. So if it's going to be a down day, or if it is a down day, they know, okay, I'm looking for my pink elephant. If it's an up day, they're looking for their blue giraffe. If it's a channel time, they're looking for their green alligator. You know, there's different names for trades, and I don't use those names, but I'm just being giving you a big example. So, but you don't need that many. I tell all my students they should develop one more per month. And why do I recommend that? It's because that keeps them active testing and keeps them active thinking in the market. And so as they're doing that testing and as they're doing the different things, they're going to, as they're developing another trade, all that time in the market's going to keep them fresh. So it's going to keep them current with what the market's currently doing. Versus just getting three, then, you know, then that's it, and never developing another one.
So a person has X, or we'll use you for an example. You've got, you know, 20 high probability trades in your trading toolbox. Now, based on given market conditions, could any one of those setups come into play today, or would certain market conditions limit you to, well, I'm only going to have an opportunity to use these five today, or are these two?
Yeah, each market is going to, today we had a trending down market, okay, so today in particular we had a trending down, so any of my long setups, I wouldn't have used it at all today. So any of my long setups I would have shelved, because the overall larger trend is down. So in the today's current market, I've taken no longs. I've taken shorts only. And only my shorts have come up and give me opportunities. I've had a harmonic, a double top. I've had several different trades that have come up today, and they've all been in the shorting position. Now all my long trades, you know, I've had some what you might call bear flags. I've had some flags come up today. All of my long trades have been shelf. So those trades, I don't have to even pull them out.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I can leave those set in the, I won't even look at them because I know the overall trend is down. Now the day can change in the middle of the day and go flat, and if I'm still trading, well then I'm going to look at my potential channeling trades. And so I might, that would say, okay, now it's time for channeling trades, and then I would look at those, and then if it turned and went long, then I would shelf those two, the channeling and the short trades, and I would be looking at long trades. So then double bottoms would be showing up more, and simple setups like that, coming off the bottom of channels going up versus the top and going down. So different setups and different market, the way the market is currently, tells me which one of my high probability trades I'm going to use in potentially.
And as you develop that particular high probability trade, you are developing it to work under a certain market condition.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, so you're developing, realizing, okay, in a downtrending market, you know, head and shoulders or double tops or whatever pattern you're familiar with, or channels that when we hit the long-term time channel at the top and we go down, those are all trades that are going to work in a downtrending market. In an uptrending market, reverse head and shoulders, double bottoms, those are going to work better. Hitting the bottom of channels and coming off the bottom of channel and going up, those are going to work better than the other ones. And a double top in an uptrending market is not going to produce much. It can actually, you know, it can complete its pattern and produce no money because of the leg of the up channel coming up on it. So there's different trades that you pull out for. I don't counter trend trade. I only trend trade. So because when I win, I have a higher probability of it, the trade running in my direction versus stopping me out.
Right. The trend is your friend, so why spit in the wind?
That's it. Definitely it. But a lot of people want... I found that a lot of people, for some reason, we be unique when we buy cars and we're unique when we decorate our house and stuff like that, but in the market we don't want to be unique. And a lot of people apply that being unique, like, oh, I'm going to be the first one on the new trend. No. Just go with when you think about real estate, when you're selling your house, they tell you just make everything bland and off-white. Just go off-white in the market. Just go with the trend. Don't go against it. Don't be unique. Because unique, it'll cost you money. You'll have lesser gains. You'll work harder in order to produce less results.
Well, you know, I think part of that wanting to be a counter-trend trader comes from the fact that as we sit and we watch the market, you know, we tend to want to think, well, this thing can't keep climbing, or vice versa, this thing can't keep falling. And so then we begin to try to pick the top and pick the bottom.
Yep. And the market, I look at, when we start judging the market, that's when we get into, because the market can be irrational longer than we can be liquid.
So true.
And we get into thinking it can't do, the market can do whatever it wants to do. We just need to go with the flow. We just need to figure out which way it's going and go with the flow. Like currently, the NQ, looking at that chart, it's stalled right now. You know, we've got a couple higher highs. We got a little higher low. Then we got a matching low. Now we're going to have a lower high. That, to me, is a stall area. So there's nothing right now that I see as potentially have a harmonic complete into an upside, but I don't, it's not breaking out yet. I'm not hitting a major trend line, so I wouldn't play that harmonic. I would just sit and watch the market. There's a lot of times you just sit and watch, and there's no, it's not to be anxious to get into something that you're uncertain of, because you're just promoting and breeding uncertainty in yourself. And you're giving it strength. You don't want to give uncertainty strength in the market.
And as they say, the market is always right.
It is. I tell my students, when you stand on the Colorado River and point left and the river goes left, I go, then we'll talk. You predicting where the market's going to go. But up until that day, you know, the Colorado River is just going to keep going the way it wants to, and there's nothing we can do about it. And the market's the same way.
We've talked about the need to have these specific rules so that you're not making decisions in the heat of the battle, that the decision's made before you even sit down. When this presents itself, I do this. Doesn't mean you'll always be right. It just means you're taking emotions out of the equation. Now, in your article, the last article you wrote, it says, if you find yourself not following your own rules, and that's an interesting thing. As kids, as students, as employees, we're always being handed sets of rules. And, of course, there's always that little rebel, you know, in each of us that wants to rebel against this particular rule or that particular rule because we think, you know, maybe it's not right, maybe it's not fair. And for those who've never been the boss, you've probably sat there and thought, boy, if I were the boss, this is how I would make the rules. It'd be this rule and that rule and that rule. Well, in this business of trading, you are your own boss. And in fact, you are making your own rules. There's no one telling you, okay, put this... I mean, you can do that. You can, of course, go to a mentor. You can go to someone, and they can hand you some rules, okay? But once you accept them, then you are, in fact, making them your own rule. That it becomes your rule. So we do the strangest thing. We come up with our very own set of rules. We like those rules. We write them down, we tape them on the wall in front of us, and then we end up not following our own, we rebel against our own rules. And in your article, you say, if you find yourself not following your own rules, which I think I've already pointed out, that's kind of ridiculous when you back away and look at the big picture. They're your rules. You made them up. But you find yourself not following your own rules and guidelines. It's critical that you explore and examine your thoughts and retrace the what, why, where, and when for each trait. What is it about human nature? Even when we're allowed the luxury of creating our own rules, we still don't follow them.
That's an excellent question. I don't know. But
that's an excellent answer.
Every trader I've talked to has done it at some point. And the learning curve on that, it can be vertical financially by not following your own rules. And I don't know what I know some people might have some self-sabotage issues where they're going to self-sabotage their own success for things they've been taught in the past. And any time when we're attempting to master something and we're just in the beginning stages of mastery, there's going to be a point when, as we're mastering something, that we're going to retrace, almost like the charts retrace, where we might get a 50% retrace. And right then, the important part of how we identify and how we deal with that retrace. As we have a retrace, because what we're doing is we're creating new habits, and we want to stay so much into the way a moving average stays on a chart. Why does it come back to moving average? Because it wants to work its way back to what it calls normal.
Mm-hmm.
So our emotion, we'll want to work ourselves back to that exact same normal, and whatever we may call it. And the challenge is to break out. To break out away from that, need to go to the next level. And we need to realize that as we're mastering something, we might have retraces. Okay, and actually not expect some sort of retrace, and then learn to deal with it at that point and say, okay, if this happens, how am I going to deal with this? Okay, if I break my rules, what am I going to do? And specifically, if you break your rules, what are you going to do? You know, if I have a retracement because I'm doing something new, and I'm going to want to, like a homeostasis, like almost back to normal. What used to be normal, you're breaking into a new area. And as I break into that area of mastery and I start to master these new areas, as I get a retracement, how do I deal with that? And that's important for everyone individually to look at and say, you know, and to reveal of themselves, how am I going to deal with this if I retrace? What am I going to do? And you actually set a set of rules for that. If I retrace and I start potentially not breaking my rules and giving pain for lessons to the market and giving money back to the market, what am I going to do? I'm going to take a day off. You know, I've got specific rules that if I break my rules, I have to go to those. Now, I guess I have the potential of breaking those rules too, but at some point we have to, if we can't even follow, you know, simple rules of ourselves, trading might not be our best endeavor because it is a self-governed workplace, completely self-governed.
Can anyone who knows how to use a computer, has a basic understanding of the English language and perhaps some mathematics, who's willing to truly apply themselves and to follow through on all that we have talked about, not just today in this program, but in previous programs, can anyone succeed at trading, at least to some degree?
I believe yes. I truly believe yes, if they're willing to make commitment, sacrifice, and self-discipline, and do whatever it takes in order to achieve these goals. And it's more so the mental things that we've been talking about. That's where, therein lies the difference, what makes a really successful trader and someone who's challenged all the time, because I believe the really successful trader has certainty, confidence, and has his emotions in check, and has a, you know, set of guidelines and rules that he follows or she follows in order to promote that success, and they start to cycle on that success. So one success leads to another, and then it actually just takes them to a new level of confidence. and I believe that anyone that's committed and actually commits to it and is committed to learning some new things and committed to changing their life can. I mean, Michael Jordan, famous basketball player, didn't make his freshman basketball team. He committed to making it his next year, and in my mind, he's one of the best. He didn't have any natural talent, or he had some, but he didn't have enough natural talent to make the team the first year of his high school. And then 6-8 years later, he's one of the best basketball players in the world. Just commitment.
Hard work.
Yeah, hard work, commitment, and, you know, mental focus. He didn't do that, you know, without any mental focus. There's a lot of times I'm sure people were telling him, oh, you're not going to make it. You didn't make it last year. What are you doing now? But it was to look beyond that and look inward and say, yet no, I am going to be in a create his own foundation within himself.
At the end of this article, you go right back to journaling. In fact, closing comments of the article, I stress the importance again of journaling your trades for a reason. If you're not journaling, I believe you should not be trading. Journal is a roadmap to your success. Or, and I like the way you turned this phrase here, the journal is a roadmap to your success, or the journal can be a roadmap to the discovery of the areas that need to be adjusted and refined for success.
Exactly.
So whether you're succeeding or failing, you believe that the answer to your success or failure can be found in your very own journal.
Yeah, and I look at you're winning either way. As long as you're following your journal, you're winning. And like I said before, when you pay for what I call paying for a lesson in the market. So if I have what most people call losing trade, I don't call any of my trades losing. I say they're all winners because I extract information from them. So the market's my teacher, is the way I look at this in this field. So as it's my job to extract the information. The teacher lays it out there. It's my job to extract the information. And if I paid for a lesson, I'm happy because I've got some information. I've become smarter. So I don't look at any trade as a loser. I look at them as all winning because every time, no matter what the result is, I become more knowledge of the market, and I write that down in my journal.
Now, you talk about extracting a lesson or knowledge from the trade that perhaps was not profitable. But if you followed all of your rules and the trade was not profitable, then there are times when we simply have to accept that in this given circumstance, the market did not do what we have documented that it normally does 73.4% of the time, or whatever that number might be.
Right. It did it to 26.6. It was just one of those. It was the, you know, it was the other half or the other portion of the trade. Sometimes there is no... if you followed all your rules and you stuck to, you know, your entries, your trailing stop, your stop, whatever you have set up, your pattern, your channel, your trend line, whatever it was that brought you into the trade, and you followed all your rules, sometimes you've done everything correctly, but what you've learned is that you did follow, you were diligent, you followed your rules, you did everything for your best own interest. You did all those things, and yet this was one of those trades that you back-tested from before, that you were willing to accept the 23% or 26%, whatever the number was, risk. And so that's one of those trades. And, you had to pay the electric bill. We had to, pay some business expenses. Those are our business expenses.
Cost of doing business in the market.
Yep, that's the cost of doing business.
When we design these rules and we do back testing, and we say, well, this trade back tests, profitable 70% of the time. Still stings when we grab one of those 30 percenters. And that's really, and I believe that it's so critical for a trader to be able to simply accept that what we just said, hey, that's the cost of doing business. There is no holy grail. You're not going to be 100% right all the time. But what you can't do is you can't get psychologically and emotionally shaken so that the next time your set of rules present themselves in an orderly fashion the way they're supposed to, you're gripped by fear and can't take the trade. If that begins to happen to you, then pretty soon all of your trades have the potential to become part of that 30%. And you keep missing the 70% because you watch this one go by. Okay, that worked. Okay, boy, there it goes again. Okay, there it goes again. Oh my gosh, there it goes again. All right, it's setting up again. Boy, I'm going for it this time. Well, the law of percentages says it's due for one of those 30% non-profitable trades.
Right.
And then we sit there and we bang our head on the wall and go, oh man, I blew it again. And you can really begin to dig yourself into a mental hole like that.
Yeah, you can, and the more challenge is when it happens like twice in a row. When you're diligent twice in a row, and you'll find that, okay, my trade is twice in a row, I've got two of those 30%ers in a row, which can happen. Now, one of my rules is if it happens three times in a row, that I go back and I retest that trade, and I actually will shelf that trade until I've got some results from the retest, because if it's three in a row, to me, maybe I'm not seeing something. So then it's for me to enlarge my vision to shelf that trade for a day or so until I learn something from the lesson. I'm like, okay, there must be something. I always figure there's something I can learn. So I just keep digging until I learn something, and I shelf that trade, because sometimes we'll get a little bit too focused on things and won't realize, oh, I'm in a downtrend, you know, using double bottom trades. You know, that's not going to work. So, and when I tested them, I was in an uptrend or a flat market. So the thing is, when I get hit three times in a row or pay three lessons, then I have a rule that adjusts with that. But two times in a row, what we need to just do is be steadfast, because that's that fear and uncertainty playing king of the mountain in your mind. And if there's fear there, certainty's not going to live there. So we have to just keep certainty on top. Say, okay, that's two of the ten, okay, or two of the nine, two of the ten, whatever the percentages are. Other times it doesn't happen. So, okay, check that one. All right. Now, every time, though, I have to keep going into that trade and keep diligent about it, because you've done testing. And like I said earlier, when we first started talking, is if you, by changing your trade parameters on the fly, you throw all your back testing and all your other work out. Basically dismiss it all, and you've thrown it all out, because all that work you've done before is based on no emotion. Now we've dragged emotions into it, and now we're going to change all of our parameters of when we enter and exit, so our percentages are gone out the window. There's no percentage anymore if we're not diligent about taking the trades.
Good stuff, Doug. Anything else you want to add today?
No.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. This was a great article, and I'm hoping you'll be writing another one for us maybe sometime this week.
Yep, you'll get one. Finish it today. I'll get you this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure you have time to get ready for class, a couple hours, and I just appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, and I do my very best to put to you questions that I know that traders have and things that they wrestle with mentally, because over the last few years, not only have I experienced them myself, but I get emails from people. And so for those of you out there listening, if you have questions or topics that you'd like me to discuss with Doug the next time he comes back on the program, email me ct@cfrn.net, or when you go out to the blog to read the actual articles, Doug's email address is right there, doug@excglobal.com. Feel free to shoot him an email, and he'll bring it up the next time I have him on the show. Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, you too.
All righty. Bye-bye.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.